And welcome to Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday, June 26th. My name is Shona Strasser. We have a nice show lined up for you today. We'll learn about the ASSE Student Exchange Program with guest Cindy Schmidt. We'll talk with Larry Parker about the Gustavus Centennial events coming up. And Catherine Hatch will be here with Arts Up. We've got Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, and more. But first, National Native News. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Crumbling roads and bridges in Indian Country have Native business leaders uneasy. More from Matt Laszlo in Washington, D.C.
The U.S. Highway Trust Fund spends more money than it takes in. Federal and Indian leaders want to see the Highway Trust Fund solvent. Among them is Gary Davis, president of the National Center for American Indian Enterprise Development.
I think it's one of the many initiatives that the National Center understands that's important to advancing economic development.
Historically, the gas tax has funded the Highway Trust Fund, but more fuel-efficient cars are making it insolvent. There's a debate swirling in Congress over whether to raise the gas tax, but neither side seems too eager to vote for that during an election year. Derek Watchman is chairman of the National Center for American Indian Enterprise.
And so how do you pay for it? You know, we've all been dependent on the highway trust funds and the taxes from that. I know from the state funds and from BIA. And so if that whole source has been depleted, it's going to be a challenge.
House Republicans are considering basically ending Saturday mail delivery in order to redirect that money into the highway trust fund. But Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid of Nevada supports another proposal that would temporarily lower taxes on profits in multinational corporations and then redirect that money into the trust fund. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
Wisconsin's Lac des Flambeaux tribe is offering college courses to inmates at a county jail. As WXPR's Natalie Jablonski reports, it's part of an effort to reduce crime.
The tribe's Education and Workforce Development Director, Joni Theobald, says the new college courses are designed to help inmates who may lack higher education or workforce skills to move forward.
We see those correlations of a lack of college or even a lack of high school completion. And as an inmate or a community member has a sentence, how can we help them make productive use or start introducing that reintegration process?
The Lacouturay Ojibwa Community College is providing the instruction. Funded by the Lac des Flambeaux tribe, the college already offers courses in the Ashland, Bayfield, and Sawyer County jails. Theobald says teaching in a jail does present some unique challenges. The courses are gender-specific, with separate sessions offered for men and women, and organizers have set it up so that those whose sentences end in the middle of their instruction can finish the course at the Lac des Flambeaux campus. Lac des Flambeaux declared a state of emergency last year in response to high levels of drugs and crime on the reservation. Theobald says this is one way of addressing the underlying causes. For National Native News, I'm Natalie Jablonski in Rhinelander, Wisconsin.
This weekend, the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs will commemorate the anniversary of a treaty signing. KWSO's Will Robbins reports.
The actual signing of the Treaty of 1855 took place over a century and a half ago, but the principles lined out in the historic document are the foundation of how members of the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs live in the modern day. Cassie Kachaya is the president of the Paiute Treaty Days Committee. She explains the celebration began in the late 1960s by descendants of the original treaty signers.
They thought it was important because day to day of our lives, we, you know, exercise our treaty. You know, our health care, the way we live, the place we live on these grounds, although it's not where we originally were domiciled back in the 1850s, but it's within our ceded area where we can actually continue gathering our foods.
Paiumche is a Sahaptin language word meaning let's celebrate. The Paiumche Treaty Days powwow features Native American dancers and drummers, a rodeo, amateur boxing tournament, parade, and other events. I'm Will Robbins reporting.
In June 1906, Mesa Verde National Park in Colorado was established to protect archaeological sites, including cliff dwellings. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Supported by Sacred Wind Community Connect, providing scholarships and internet training to the Navajo Nation and Pueblo of Laguna in New Mexico. Sacred Wind believes broadband can reinforce Native cultures and offer means for self-determination. SacredWindCommunications.com. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And you're tuned in to Juno Afternoon. And it is Thursday, June 26th. My name is Shona Strausser. And on the phone with me right now, I have Cindy Schmidt, and she's with ASSE Student Exchange Program. Welcome to the program here, Cindy.
Hi. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So for folks who don't know what the ASSE Student Exchange Program is, could you give fill us in on that?
Yes. ASSC is a student exchange program that started in 1976 between the American Scandinavian countries and broadened its horizons to exchange our students to 25 different countries around the world, and we take in students from 51 different countries from around the world. So we do this by finding host families who are willing to host a student for a semester or for a school year. And right now we're looking for families in Alaska, and Juneau would be a perfect spot to place a student or two.
And what is your role? Is your role specifically placing exchange students with families, host families?
Well, my role actually is I'm the area coordinator, and I find area representatives with in the school district who would be willing to find the host families and mentor the student and the families throughout the school year. And I'm currently looking for one or two area reps in the Juneau area.
And how many students are you looking for, one or two students, to be placed here in Juneau?
We would like to place as many as we can. So I'm not sure how many the school would allow, but some schools allow a lot and some only have two or three. And so I would like to find two or three families who would like to host a student. They get to choose the student. The student comes from with spending money and insurance. They're between 15 and 18 years of age. All we're asking is that the family provide a loving environment, a bed, and three meals a day plus snacks, and invite them to be part of their family for the year.
What makes the best host family? Is it a loving environment, that kind of thing? But are there specific things that you've noticed families in the past that have been successful?
Really someone that really cares about teenagers, because these are teenage kids. Active family is works really well, because the kids usually are very sports-oriented or into music. We get a wide variety of children, and the host families get to choose who they want to spend the year with, because we want them to fit into their environment. So if the family likes to camp or snowboard or are very active, then they're going to want a student that likes to do the same things they do. So mostly it's finding families to choose the student that fits their lifestyle.
And how do you, for people who are thinking about, oh, well, I could be a host family, how would you suggest that they prepare for things like language barriers and things like that?
Well, all the students that come here do speak English. What we like them to do, we like to get them hosting as soon as possible, get them their applications completed so they can start contacting the student and talking to them ahead of time, because that's one of the major things, is that they know one another and feel comfortable from the start. So what we would really like is for people to give us a call or to go online and make an application, and then we can talk about it, and we do an orientation to help them prepare for the student coming. And we have contact with them every month throughout the school year. So they're not on their own. The student's not on their own. The families aren't on their own. Their area rep will be there helping them throughout the year.
So that means that the area rep would be a person here in Juneau that could assist with any issues that might arise?
That's right. So we are looking for an area rep there, and we do pay a stipend. It's a pretty good stipend. It's anywhere from $700 to $1,000 per host family that is found. And their time involved throughout the year is somewhere between 25 and 30 hours.
Per family?
Per family, yes.
And so are you looking to place people for this upcoming school year, the 14-15 school year?
I would like to, yes. We'll be placing students clear through the mid part of August. But the sooner we can find a family, the better.
And has your organization placed students, foreign exchange students, with Juneau families prior to this?
They have, but it's been a few years since we've had somebody in Juneau.
Is there a person that they could, if people wanted to find out more information, could they call you if they're kind of on the fence maybe or just looking for some more guidelines and details?
Well, what I'd like them to do is call 1-800-733-2773, or they can go to www.host.asse.com. At that site, they can look at videos and see more about our program, and the application is actually at that site.
And is there some compensation for the host families for, getting just basic things for the student?
No, the student comes with their own spending money to buy their own clothes, to buy the things that they need. Other than food and lodging. They're coming in on a J-1 visa, and we're not allowed by the government to compensate families. This is a volunteer program, and so we are unable to compensate them.
Do you mostly look for families who already have established families, so they have other kids maybe around the same age or a little younger? Does that usually tend to work better?
Sometimes, I guess, but actually we found that older families that are empty nesters work really well, but we also have families out there that are single parents or have never had kids before but want to see what hosting's all about and end up being really good host homes for the students. We don't have a lot of restrictions, but a home has to be 26 or plus, the people living in it, the parents.
26 years of age, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And they also have to pass a criminal background check. There will be a home screening done, and we have to have 3 references in order for them to host a student.
Great. And what's that website one more time, just in case somebody out there is saying, yes, I would love to do that. Sounds like a great time.
It's www.host.asse.com.
Great. Cindy Schmidt, thank you so much for talking to us about the ASSC Student Exchange Program, and hopefully you find some good Juno homes for students, foreign exchange students.
Thank you very much for having us on your program.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And you're listening to Juno Afternoon, and we're going to hear a little Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 26th of June, 2014. It's the birthday of the blues musician Big Bill Brunsey, born in Scott, Mississippi in 1898. It's the birthday of Walter Farley, born Syracuse, New York, 1916, who always wanted a horse when he was a boy, but his parents could not afford one. So he started writing stories about horses. And while he was a student at Columbia, he wrote a novel, The Black Stallion, story of a boy and a wild horse who survive a shipwreck and become friends on a deserted island. The book sold so well that Walter Farley went on to write 20 more novels about horses. And it's the birthday of Pearl S. Buck, born Hillsborough, West Virginia, 1892. Her parents were missionaries in China. She was raised there from the age of 3 months. She spoke Chinese first, said she did not consider herself a white person when she was a child, spent the afternoons with her beloved Chinese nurse, took her to visit friends where the child listened to women gossip. Pearl Buck married a missionary. They lived in northern China and then Nanking. In 1920, she gave birth to a daughter, Carol, who had a severe developmental disability. She would scream and cry for hours on end. By the winter of 1927, Buck was living in Shanghai. She had just finished the manuscript of her first novel, and the manuscript had been destroyed by looters. Her marriage was deteriorating. Her husband did not want to leave China. Pearl Buck knew that the only hope of giving her daughter long-term care was to go to the United States. She had to figure out a way to provide for her. So she returned to writing. She moved to America with her daughter. She published her first novel, East Wind, West Wind, in 1930. And started work on her second novel, which took her just 3 months. Pearl Buck was amazed when the second novel was chosen by the Book of the Month Club, and she got a check for $4,000, enough money to pay for several years of her daughter's schooling. The second novel was The Good Earth. It sold nearly 2 million copies in its first year, and Pearl Buck won the Nobel Prize in Literature in 1938. Here's a poem for today by Wendell Berry. Again, I resume the long lesson, how small a thing can be pleasing, how little in this hard world it takes to satisfy the mind and bring it to its rest. Within the ongoing havoc, the woods this morning is almost unnaturally still. Through stalled air, unshadowed light, a few leaves fall of their own weight. The sky is gray. It begins in mist, almost at the ground, and rises forever. The trees rise in silence, almost natural, but not quite, almost eternal, but not quite. What more did I think I wanted? Here is what has always been. Here is what will always be. Even in me, the maker of all this returns in rest. Even in the slightest of his works, a yellow leaf slowly falling and is pleased. A poem by Wendell Berry. Again, I resume the long lesson from This Day, Sabbath Poems Collected and New, published by Counterpoint and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, you can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And that was the Writer's Almanac, Garrison Keillor, for Thursday, June 26th. You're tuned in to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strausser. Thanks so much for listening. On the phone, again, it's phone day. I love it. It's Lee and Linda Parker, and they're talking to us today about the Gustavus Centennial events. Hi, nice to talk with you all.
Hello.
Hi, Shona.
So for folks who don't know, I mean, I actually have no idea, the Gustavus Centennial events, could you go ahead and fill us in on, you're celebrating 100 years of something. So what is it?
Well, 100 years ago is when the very first folks landed on the shores of Gustavus in an attempt to find a place to homestead. So it was really the beginning of what Gustavus is today. Following those first three couples, they were, we called them the honeymooners, because they all were brand new married couple that were coming here as their first effort after getting married, and they started what is now Gustavus, which is much larger, of course, but started with many other homesteads after that.
So were they also the people that termed the name of the place, Gustavus?
No, that came much later. This was Strawberry Point at the time. In fact, they were told about Strawberry Point in Seattle by a steamboat captain, and they thought it sounded very, very nice. And they came in became Gustavus really 25 years later, or 1925, rather, and that was done by the post office.
So these honeymooners, how many families, you know, settled and started to homestead there? Was it one or two, or did it was kind of a mad rush?
These three couples is what started it, and then following them were other families. My family was the first family that actually came and stayed. The honeymooners did not actually remain. After some efforts of homestead, they failed. My grandfather, Abraham Lincoln Parker, came in 1917, but the very first ones are what we are celebrating today. It's been 100 years since they came. It was in June of 1914 is when they came, and my grandfolks came 3 years later than that.
Wow. So for folks who might make it over to Gustavus here pretty soon, what do you have lined up for everybody?
Well, Linda's really at the head of the scheduling of events, and I'm going to let her talk about the activities.
On Friday night, which is our grand opening, which is tomorrow night, at 7 o'clock, we have a brand-new cemetery here, and we have a monument building that we will be opening for the first time to the public and dedicating to the city of Gustavus, and it houses a museum room and the records room for the cemetery. As well, we will be unveiling a new bronze memorial that will be memorializing those that died in our airplane crash here in the woods in 1957, which everybody that visits Gustavus goes out on the trail to see, because the wreckage still remains largely intact in our woods. And for that unveiling, we have the son and daughter of the captain who died in the airplane crash coming to do the unveiling.
This was an Air National Guard, by the way.
Right. Mm-hmm. Then on Saturday, it's a whole day of fun and festivities. We've said it's the biggest party Gustavus has ever seen, and we hope that's true. It's going to be food, contests, games, activities, live music, fun all day long. Starts off with a cannon blast, and then from there, log rolling in the river and all sorts of fun and things happen.
She has more things scheduled for Saturday that I don't know how we're going to get them all done.
Yes, that is true. And then Sunday morning, the Gustavus Inn, which is a historic inn here that started as a family homestead in the 1920s, will be hosting a sourdough breakfast feed for the entire community. So we encourage everybody to show up for that, and if you bring a container, they'll give you a little sample of their sourdough starter, which is a famous little recipe that they have, to take home with you. Then in the afternoon, we have VIP tours, which we're going to take a tour to show the homestead original locations, as well as tour inside several of the original 1930s homesteads. And then Sunday night, we end our celebration with a two-hour stage production in the gym, which is our largest facility here that can hold a group of people. And it's based on a historic kind of review of the last 100 years, and that will be a lot of fun. And then that's the end of our three-day celebration, but we will be celebrating Centennial all year long.
Wow. So you actually, the two of you have a very personal connection with Centennial. Yeah?
Yes.
That's amazing. So Lee, you were born and raised, and your family has always been in Gustavus?
Well, my grandfather actually came here after he came to Alaska with the 1898 gold rush up to Klondike, and he was one of the prospectors that actually struck a little gold. But when he got run out of Canada, he got run out because of good reasons, not bad. he was looking for a place to bring his family, and he liked Gustavus because he looked like he could farm here. So he did. He farmed. He raised cattle. They did all kinds of activities, but they were actually coming here later, and I was actually not born here, to answer your question, Joan. That was a long answer to your question, but I was born in Seattle and came up here and spent my summers as I was growing up.
Mm-hmm. And when did you all make the move to Gustavus permanently?
Well, Linda and I moved up here permanently probably about, 5-6 years ago. We've always had a summer home here. We've spent every moment we could when we weren't south.
And the rest of the time in the desert sunshine, so it's a good combination. Same thing a lot of Alaskans do.
Indeed. So do you know if there are more ferries running this weekend that could get people to Gustavus, or is the flight the way to go?
As a matter of fact, the ferry system is accommodating us with an extra ferry this weekend. So those folks who want to come out on the ferry, the ferry leaves the Auk Bay Terminal Saturday morning at 7 a.m., and you'll get out here just in time for the festivities on Saturday. So you get in all the activities on Saturday. You'll be able to do the Sunday morning pancake breakfast, and then Sunday they have an extra ferry going back into Juneau. We'll get you back into Juneau, I think around 4:30 or 5 o'clock or something like that.
And that ferry will leave before our two-hour stage production in the gym. However, we do have charter flights, all day long from several different charter facilities, and also once-a-day Alaskan airline jet.
Yeah, all the air charters that come in here, you can, you've got Wings of Alaska, Seaport, and...
Era.
Yes, I'm forgetting one for some reason.
Fjord,
there we go, Fjord Aviation, I'm sorry.
Well, that's great. How many people do you expect to attend the festivities? I mean, is it all a buzz in Gustavus right now?
That is the buzz in Gustavus, and that is the big question. It's a difficult event to plan for because we don't know if there'll be a couple hundred or 1,000. So, you know, we are off-road system, so it's not like we have people going by and saying, hey, let's stop. So it's a little difficult to get to us. But on the other hand, we have families of old homesteaders coming in. We've heard of people coming in from the Carolinas and different states that have never, ever been to Alaska but somehow saw about it on the web and decided to go to a centennial celebration. So bottom line is, we don't know.
We are prepared, however, as far as food. We are prepared for it, the most that we can imagine would come. So don't worry. Come and enjoy. We'll have plenty to share.
That sourdough starter, I would get on the boat for that.
You should.
Well, Linda's got quite a recipe set up for Saturday, too. I don't know if you want to talk about what you're going to do Saturday night.
You've caught me off guard there. I don't know. Saturday night for our dinner, in addition to, of course, hot dogs, hamburgers, and that kind of thing, banana splits, strawberry sundaes all day, we're going to be doing what we call a haystack dinner, and it's actually, I think, of Amish origins, and you build your own haystack by starting with broken corn chips and tortilla chips and rice and hamburger and start loading everything on, and you top it all off with melted cheese, and it makes a complete meal. So we're in the country here, so to speak, Alaska style, and we're doing country haystacks.
Nice. So I have one more question that might throw you both off guard, but I've been thinking about it for the last 10 minutes. Strawberry Point, did people just see a bunch of strawberries or what? Was it the red color?
We are on the flatlands here, and like in other places southeast, we have a lot of wild strawberries. And when the homesteaders first came, there weren't so many trees, and there were fields and fields and fields of wild strawberries. So they would make strawberry wine, strawberry shortcake, strawberry jams, and the aroma of strawberries floating across the flats, we were well known for that for many, many years. Now there's more trees, a little less strawberries, but that's why we were called Strawberry Point.
That's great. Are there other people such as yourselves that will be talking about the history of Gustavus and the first settlers and that, you know, more information like that?
Well, you can go to our website at gustavushistory.org, and there's quite a lot of information there. We have hundreds and hundreds of photographs and documents and historical things, as well as stories that have been written about the history of Gustavus. And the Gustavus History, which is sponsoring this whole event, is an organization set up specifically to maintain the history of Gustavus, and it's a nonprofit 501c3 organization. So it will remain. We will not lose this. We will not lose the history of Gustavus.
That's incredible. So it's junohistory.org, and we'll
GustavusHistory.org.
Oh, of course. Of course, I'm like, Juno History, just because I'm here. GustavusHistory.org, and is the list of events on the website that's for this weekend as well?
If you go to GustavusHistory.org, the page will come up that kind of gives the general events for the day.
Yeah, there is not an actual schedule of events. We have it in writing, but we did not put it on the website. I'm sorry we didn't, because
it tells you specifically kind of what goes on each
day. It's pretty impressive. If you look at it, it's like 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock. She's just got it down to a pat. So you'll have to come, and we'll give you a schedule when you come off the ferry or come off the airplane. We'll have schedules for you so you can see how it's panning out. But it's very, very busy 3 days.
Yeah, if you're already in Gustavus, you can pick up your schedule at Sunnyside or Toshco, and probably 300 to 400 schedules have already been given out.
Oh, sounds like a great time. And it's amazing. The ferry leaves Saturday morning from Juneau to Gustavus at 7 a.m. It leaves the Auk Bay Terminal. It returns Sunday at 4:30. So you could have a full Saturday and a full Sunday to check out the history of Gustavus.
Right. And if you'd like to come on the on a flight, there's lots and lots of flights, scheduled flights arriving here all day, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, if you want to spend the whole 3 days.
It's amazing. Lee and Linda Parker, thank you so much. It sounds like a great weekend.
You're welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Hope to see you there.
Okay.
Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And thank you for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday, June 26th, and my name is Shona Strasser. Oh,
You're tuned in to Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday, June 26th. My name is Shona Strasser. I have a few announcements here that really interesting things going on in our community and things to keep up with. We've got the Red Cross offering lots and lots of trainings throughout the summer, actually, to get your adult and pediatric first aid CPR up to date. So there's tons and tons of classes you can take, and I can't recommend it enough to be able to save anybody at any time. Check out redcross.org/take-a-class, and tons and tons of classes. You can enroll for one of those online. 4A's is hosting a free HIV testing event tonight at the Viking Lounge in honor of National HIV Testing Day. So that's tonight, 7 to 10 p.m. upstairs at the Viking, located at 218 Front Street in downtown Juneau. You can learn more about HIV and AIDS prevention and get a free confidential HIV test. They're just 20 minutes. The tests take 20 minutes, and they're rapid results. So go there and check that out. And then also, if you are a graduate of Juneau Douglas High School, class of 1984, the 30-year reunion is happening very soon. It's July 2nd to July 6th, and they're looking for people to register. If you can register, you can do it on Facebook, class of 1984. JDHS1984.com also is the website. The schedule of events is listed on both sites. So check that out, too. Here is Bird Note for Thursday, June 26th.
This is Bird Note. What are those curious sounds? They're the calls of a small gray seabird, a rhinoceros auklet with its chick, deep in a burrow on Washington State's Protection Island. They were recorded during the small hours of a summer night. That's because adult rhinoceros auklets spend their days at sea. They return at night to feed their chicks small fish carried crosswise in their beaks. The young birds spend up to 8 weeks in burrows up to 12 feet long that their parents excavate with their beaks and feet. The island harbors one of the largest nesting colonies of rhinoceros auklets in the world, numbering about 72,000 adult birds. But the birds face significant challenges. Black-tailed deer are overgrazing the island, trampling the birds' burrows, and subjecting them to erosion. And a growing number of bald eagles are making meals of the auklets. The birds' breeding success reflects the health of surrounding marine waters. Scientists are monitoring the type, number, and food value of the fish the adults provide. And to find out how the chicks are faring, they're snaking fiber optic infrared cameras mounted on long cables into the burrows. Like to see what the cameras see? Have a look on our website, birdnote.org.
Programming support comes from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Tonight on 360 North, it's Rain Country Reflections at 8, followed at 8:30 by Alaska Magazine Television. At 9, AARP Alaska host Ann Secrets and her guests discuss our judicial merit selection system. The Aviators goes to the Boundary Bay Air Show at 9:30. At 10, Part 2 of Japanland, Spiritland, takes us on that country's most famous pilgrimage, a journey filled with adventure and surprise. Tonight on 360 North and 360north.org.
Honey, I'm worried. We should do something.
I don't know. I don't know if we should get involved.
Babe, we don't want her to get hurt.
Okay, I'll call 911.
Every Alaskan has a right to be safe and free from domestic and sexual violence in our homes, relationships, and communities. You can make a difference. Respect is always the right choice.
Brought to you by the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
You're tuned in to Juno Afternoon, Thursday, June 26th. My name is Shona Strausser. And in the studio with me, I have Catherine Hatch here with Arts Up.
Hey, hey Catherine. Shona.
How are you?
I'm so enjoying this beautiful weather.
It is amazing.
Finally. I feel like it's been too rainy too long, and tomorrow is, of course, Food Truck Fridays, and we need this kind of weather to get everyone excited about food and Friday.
I hear it's supposed to be amazing tomorrow as well.
Exactly, yeah. It's only going to get better and warmer, so you're going to want to come down. We've got vendors aplenty, and similar to last week, Perseverance Theater will still have the main hall, so we've lined up a bunch of one-man acts to play in our gallery, which was really successful last time. It's a more intimate space. The seating filled up really quick. This week, kicking it off at 5:30, we've got C. Scott Fry, followed by Tony Tangs at 6 p.m., who I've heard is the winner of the Dirty Song Contest. He's going to keep it a little family-friendly at the Jack, but if you like his style, you should look him up. He bartends at the Columbia Ferry, but playing a little bit of music for us, and we'll close it off with Ryan Sullivan, who goes by 5 o'clock Charlie when he's making music there on stage. So that'll all be happening in the Jack Gallery. And added bonus, we will be able to eat and drink in there. We're going to dismantle the UC Alaska show a little bit early. That way there's no problem. You know, it's hard to eat a big schnitzel burger from Pucker Wilson's when you've got a $15,000 otter blanket on the wall. So I'm going to get the otter blanket to safety. You can eat your schnitzel. It'll all be great. Unless schnitzel is like a bad word now that we lost that game to the Germans earlier today.
You know, it's okay because we're still through the round of 16.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
I'm at peace with it.
I really don't understand how soccer works. Let's just be honest. You win or you lose and you keep going forward. So good lesson in life. Who else do we have going on? We've got Breezy Street is coming back next week.
What did you say? Breezy Street?
Breezy Street Cafe, or Breezy Street Fair. They've got a Facebook page. You can check out all the cool, I don't even know how to describe it, really. It's kind of like Caribbean, kind of Cajun, a little bit of everything Filipino food mixed into one. It was almost a little Indian last week, too, with one of the flatbreads they were making. But they almost always have their deep-fried bananas, and I don't think I need to describe that anymore. Delish. And they're just the sweetest people ever. Fry bread is there, as always. We've got cupcakes, sea monster, and sweetmeats. There's Johnny Fishmonger probably bringing out the oysters. You never know. We'll have jewelry, the cutout manders, bunch of crafts. Big brothers and sisters are going to be there, and last time they gave me a cool pair of sunglasses for free, so come check that out. We are also going to be doing Mosquito Market because we do it at nice weather. So look for the flag. We're going to raise it up the pole later today, and that'll be the sign that if you've got junk in your trunk, come park in our lot, $5, and you can loosen it up a bit. You know, it's just a little flea market that we do. Set up, I think, 4:30 or 5, pop open the trunk, and then sell us whatever you got. I mean, we don't care.
Whole new meaning to junk in the trunk.
Yeah.
What else?
We've got the usual going on for Friday in terms of Dan Hobson is going to be playing classical guitar at the Gold Room. Scorcher is traveling out to the Valley this Friday. So from 10 p.m. on, you can hear them out at McGivney's, which is kind of fun. They're usually such downtown folk, but everyone avoids downtown in the summer, except for Food Truck Fridays.
So
go out to McGivney's. They're going to be there watching games anyway. Just stay for the show. This Saturday, a couple of things going on, of course. We've got Purple Passion KXLL Prince Tribute Party, where they're going to be playing the Prince movie, Purple Rain, and then just getting all sorts of wild. But also, the wait is over. We at the Jack, anyway, have been long waiting to see what Perseverance has been doing with our main hall. If you've been following the pictures that they post on Facebook, it's just unrecognizable. Now, I say that every time we have a wedding in the Jack, it's just like, wow, it's completely changed with all the decorations. But here, it's really, really changed. I mean, they've put in this beautiful stage with sets. It looks like, you know, you're able to make that connection in your mind that, wow, I'm in someone's living room now, or depending on whichever show. They're kicking it off with Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike. And the photos have just been hilarious from all the rehearsals, the dress rehearsals. So that one's going to be a real fun show. Of course, they've got Blue Bear and Warriors playing all weekend. It's kind of a funny schedule this week, but following the 4th of July, next Friday, it's all going to be regular after that. So come by, and you can get your Flex Pass. You can see all three shows, or you can see one show three times, or one show, two dates. You know, however you want to wing it, get the Flex Pass to do it a bit cheaper. So that's happening out at the Jack as well. Sunday, Music on the Fly, Daughters of the New Moon. Now, this is a Middle Eastern dance group. So they're a bunch of fun, and so if you want to see a little bit of belly dancing, hear kind of Middle Eastern music as you're waiting for your flight or just going to go see a free concert, 6:45 at the Juneau Airport baggage claim area.
That is so cool. I just think about the people that are coming in from out of town.
That are going to suddenly wonder what they've stumbled upon here in Juneau.
This is a groovy place.
This is a loose, high-rolling place, and you might have seen this kind of free concert in other airports around the world or country if you've been traveling and suddenly you noticed someone playing music with a hat in front of them. This is kind of the thing we do. It's supported through the Jack and different grants, and it's just so cool. Holland America has actually donated to it to keep it going along with Food Truck Friday. So
I go to Austin, Texas a lot, and Austin, you know, you have some of the best bands in the state playing at the airport.
Totally.
And it's a
huge jam. For free.
Oh, of course.
So we're just trying to recreate that a little bit, and just anywhere we can, we're injecting art, you know, public art, and whether that's paintings, performance art, or music, we're going to try and do it. So that's just one of our efforts to keep music and stuff happening all over the place for free. There's going to be a Mad Men affair at SALT. It's a fundraiser for Groundworks, I believe, and I don't care who it's for because I love Mad Men and the whole 60s style, and at SALT, the food is going to be amazing, so that would be something to do this Sunday, starting at 7. All through the weekend, we've got more Summerfest going on. I need to talk about next Thursday. I'm going to skip ahead a little bit. Next Thursday, first Thursday, we're switching up the game a little bit. Instead of first Friday of the month with all the gallery openings, because next Friday is the 4th of July, you're going to be so busy building sandcastles, having your dog compete in the Frisbee show, getting a lot of sleep after that large bonfire the night before, that you're going to want to do all the gallery walk on the 3rd. First Thursday, we're going to have a new show in our Jack Gallery that's M.K. McNaughton. There's going to be shows all over downtown, so just pretend that First Friday is actually Thursday. Food Truck Friday is going to be Food Truck Thursday, so we're going to have the same deal, just all scooter for one day. That way, for the 4th of July, you are free to come downtown for our Flapjacks fundraiser. Pucker Wilson will be there. Breezy Street Cafe is going to be there as well. And then you can watch the parade, get pancakes, and not have to worry about gallery walk because you did it the night before.
My mind is blown.
So don't forget about that schedule change.
Food Truck Thursday.
After that, it'll all be smooth sailing.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
So where can people get this information? Because, you know, we're just mere mortals.
We're rolling
right
through today.
Yeah.
more information about all the artists participating in this upcoming month's first Thursday and all of the food trucks is all on our website, jackjahc.org. And you can also buy tickets to the shows I mentioned and just check out all of the different things going on.
And you know what's cool is that the Jack and KTOO work together so much that you can also check out this calendar on KTOO.org.
That's right. They're linked. And if you want stuff put on that calendar, send us an email, junoartscouncil@gmail.com.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah.
Catherine, thank you so much. It's going to be a super first
Well, Food Truck Friday tomorrow.
Food Truck Friday.
No, like first.
Then First Thursday and Food Truck Thursday or whatever.
Yeah.
Just basically just hang around.
Yeah, and it's going to be sunny. So thank you so much.
Of course. If you change your mind, take a chance on the first in line. Take a chance on me, I'm still free. Take a chance on me. If you need me, let me know. Gonna be around. If you got no place to go when you're feeling down. If you're all alone.
And you're tuned in to KTOO Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strausser. It's Thursday, June 26th. And here in the studio, we have Titan. Hi, welcome.
Hello. It's so good to be here.
So I get to call you Titan. I think that's just cool because that's your roller derby name.
It is.
Are you allowed to mix and match? So if you're a roller derby girl, can you only go by Titan if you're talking about roller derby stuff?
Well, it's pretty flexible, and it's optional to have a roller derby name. Actually, there's lots of roller girls who, across the states, who don't have roller derby names. They skate under their real names.
Really? I did not know that. I thought it was just a thing. Are they looked down? Are they shunned by the other roller derby girls?
No, actually, it's part of a movement amongst roller girls to be taken a little bit more seriously as a sport versus a spectacle.
Got it.
So when a lot of girls that go professional in roller derby and actually coach and skate, it's kind of a mix of whether they choose to take their real name or keep their derby name. But it's an interesting dynamic there.
I always thought it was no looking down upon. Yeah, sure.
Anybody.
It makes a lot of sense. I thought it was like one of those Beyonce things, you know, when she gets on stage, she's Sasha Fierce, you know. But no, I get it. Okay, cool.
But you're right. It completely helps a lot of roller derby players get into game mode to become their roller derby name.
Have a different persona.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, cool. So the roller derby has a lot going on. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So just because we're in the off season, we don't have any bouts, does not mean that we're not doing anything. We still practice. And actually this evening at the Rockwell in the Ballroom, we're having our end of season celebration at 7 o'clock, we have a little bit of a special event for our sponsors and volunteers. And then at 8 o'clock, we're opening it up to anybody who wants to come and join us. If you haven't gotten a chance to meet the Roller Girls and you're a fan, come stop by, have a drink, say hello. So from 8 o'clock on, it's open to the public. And then in case you're a sponsor or a volunteer and you haven't gotten the notice, show up at 7 o'clock and we've got a little bit of an appreciation gift for you.
Oh, that's great. I have to say, I have partied with some roller derby girls before.
Oh, yes.
And it's been a good time every time. And is this party any different? Is there a band, DJ, that kind of thing? Or is it more just like a celebration that is where...
It's more along the lines of a meet and greet. Mm. Come stop by, have a drink, meet some roller girls. We'll have some music and a slideshow going, and it might turn into a dance party. You never know with the roller girls. But... as it's planned, it's more along the lines of a meet and greet, kind of a social event more than a party, but
Got it
very much could turn into one.
Well, we're not opposed. That's great. So what
coming? I mean, the roller derby has gone through a lot of growth, I would say. You know, you kind of hit the scene, and you hit the scene hard, and now it's pretty serious. I was wondering if you could talk about just kind of the history of roller derby in the brief amount of time it's been in Juneau.
All right. Well, roller derby in Juneau is right about, actually, we just celebrated our fourth birthday. So our first year, we didn't officially have a season. We didn't bout because we were practicing and learning. And then we had our first official skating season and had some bouts, kind of got our feet underneath us. And then last season we had our first, well, I would say it was a full season where we participated in a lot of bouts. We actually had a undefeated streak of all the people we played. We hadn't lost a game until we went to the United We Roll tournament in Fairbanks. And while we were there, we won 3 games and lost 2, I believe. So we did really well at tournament and had a great time. And so that was the year before. And then this most recent season, we actually had a fantastic season. And we went to the United We Roll tournament in Wasilla, and we won the tournament. And at that United We Roll tournament, it's a all-Alaska tournament, with the exception of the Rage City, which is Anchorage. They're all-stars. Because there's not any other teams that are at the same level that they are, they didn't participate in the tournament, but they did an exhibition bout instead. So Juneau Roller Girls got to say that they'd won the all-Alaska tournament. So exciting things for the Juneau Roller Girls in terms of skills. We've definitely stepped up our game over the last 3 years, and we're hoping that maybe this coming season we'll get to belt the Rage City All-Stars, which would be really a great challenge and learning experience for us. Let's see. Other things that you might not know about the Roller Girls, we are a nonprofit organization. We just got our federal recognition of our nonprofit tax status, which means that we, as sponsors, you can get tax benefits from sponsoring the Juneau Roller Girls. The other thing is that the Juneau Roller Girls are both a nonprofit organization and a strong supporter of other nonprofit organizations in the community. So we like to be contacted with opportunities to volunteer at other events. We like to help out other organizations. Some of our favorites are Girls on the Run, Gastineau Humane Society, K2, of course, and a variety of others. We really like helping our community out. So if you do have an opportunity for us, get on JunoRollerGirls.com and contact the PR committee. It would probably be a good place to start.
Cool.
And otherwise, if you're interested in skating with us, summertime is a great time to get rolling. We're non-competitive during the summertime, which means that we're focusing on fundamental skills. So it's a great time to get on skates and feel it out, see if you like it. And, of course, join the community of awesome ladies that skate with us.
Cool. So what's the website that people can get more information again?
It's JunoRollerGirls.com.
Easy enough?
Very easy.
Cool. And people can stop by tonight and actually probably get lots of this information, too. So at 8 o'clock, it's open to the public.
It is at 8 o'clock tonight at the Rockwell. And then another opportunity to spot the Roller Girls is the 4th of July parade. We like to participate in the parade every year. We'll be there this year, candy in hand and skates on. And we'll have information cards to hand out at that time, too. So if you see us skating by, flag us down.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Have fun tonight. It sounds like it's going to be a great time.
Thank you.
I rode my bicycle past your window last night. I roller skated to your door at daylight. It almost seems like you're avoiding me. I'm okay alone, but you got something I need. Well, I got a brand
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Auk Bay area, tuned to K276 AF 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. KRNN can be heard at digital channel 872, and KXLL can be found at 873. We're also online at ktoo.org.
To take up arms and defend the government in Baghdad against ISIS would be basically like defending a sworn enemy, which is the...